This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. We have a wonderful, wonderful show. It's going to be very intriguing, but very heartfelt, and learn a lot of lessons on how to deal with pet loss and trauma and fatigue. We're going to talk to author Jennifer Blau. She's a licensed professional counselor, and she deals with pet loss and fatigue and all the things that we have to go through as those who are involved in rescue and how to deal with those. And those are that's always a challenging situation. So we'll look forward to talking to Jennifer a little bit about that and her book, which is called To Save a Starfish, a compassion fatigue workbook for the animal welfare warrior. So it's going to be really exciting, very interesting. So everybody hang tight. We're going to come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining us now is author and licensed professional counselor for Certified Companion Fatigue, Pet Loss, and Trauma, Jennifer Blau. Talk to us about her latest book, To Save a Starfish. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Tim. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here. You know, the book was really intriguing to me in the fact that it obviously your skill set and what you deal with on a regular basis as a professional, but also the book is a workbook on for those of us who are animal welfare warriors, which I'm proud to be one, but I can understand the challenges that goes along with that. So tell us a little bit about the book, To Save a Starfish.
Yeah, so this book, it's interesting. I really had no concept of compassion fatigue or, you know, secondary trauma or any of these things until I became a counselor, because it was something that they were really trying to educate us on in grad school. You know, counselors and therapists are very susceptible to compassion fatigue and secondary trauma because we're hearing other people's, you know, stories of trauma and loss. And at that moment, I put two and two together. It's like, my God, this is what I've been struggling with this whole time, because I've been involved in animal welfare and animal rights really since I was a young teenager, both personally and professionally. And after I graduated and had a little time to actually think, I said, you know what? I really want to give back to this community. And I want to do it in a way that I can reach, you know, not just a regional audience, which is, you know, when you're a therapist, you can really only kind of work locally or within your state. And I really wanted to reach just everyone around the world and let them know there is this thing. It's called compassion fatigue. You are not weak. You are not flawed. There's nothing wrong with you. This could be what's going on with you. And, you know, I have some suggestions that might make this work a little bit more sustainable for you, because I had burned out several times, again, not really knowing what I was going through. And I didn't want anyone else to feel as ashamed and alone as I did. So that's kind of where the book, you know, kind of came from.
Yeah, and it's definitely needed, because it's one of those topics that those that are involved in animal welfare and humane societies, rescue shelters, taking care of animals. As I mentioned, I've experienced it and didn't know there was a, you know, I was any different than anybody else, but I thought I was sort of alone out there too, because typically, you know, I'm a former president of a humane society. And I know when we have volunteers, they come in, they put their toe in the water a little bit. And next thing you know, we're dragging them knee deep in the water. And then even further, trying to pull on their strengths and all the wonderful things that they can do, as well as taking care of the animals. And if you're not careful, you do face that burnout.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I mentioned, I struggled with it myself professionally. I officially kind of burned out twice until I really started to dive into all these concepts: compassion fatigue, burnout, secondary traumatic stress. You know, I learned all I could and then learned, okay, how do you now go about managing this or preventing this, or, you know, kind of coming back from this? Because putting a name to something is one, it's important, right? You can't deal with it until you kind of recognize it. And then taking that a step further, that's why I wanted to put it in a workbook format so people could, so it had a bit of a therapeutic element to it. So people could kind of work through some of those emotions that maybe they're not comfortable talking about with anyone else, at least at this point. So it's kind of a jumping off point, if you will.
Yeah. And that's the wonderful thing. I loved many of the wonderful things I loved about the book is the fact that you actually, we're hearing from people, from someone who has experience, has professional knowledge and is applying it to working with animals, and then a way to work through this, you know. And they always say that if you write it down, whatever it is you're working on, if you write it down, it sort of allows for a release of those emotions and the feelings and things just by simply writing it down. And the workbook covers that brilliantly.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is it was really cathartic for myself, actually, the process of writing this book. You know, there were a lot of tears. There was a lot of, kind of just emotional release on my part, because I was, in a sense, along with the workbook and, you know, it being educational and informative, I do also cover some of my own personal stories of my experience in animal welfare. And like I said, I kind of had to deal with some of my own demons that I felt like I had been just kind of pushing down all these years. And that definitely came out just as I wrote the book myself.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned that, you know, you faced a burned out at least on two occasions. Can you expand on that a little bit as far as what led to that? And then how did you recognize it? And then more importantly, how did you bounce back from that?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of looking back, and of course, hindsight is 2020, we kind of look back and we can put together the pieces that we can't really fit together when we're going through certain things. So when I look back, I think it all started when I was in my mid-20s. At the time, I had been a vegetarian. And, you know, I had gone to several protests with my grandma, who was an actual activist, and she was kind of my hero, really. And then I decided to go vegan. And as I was doing all this research, and I was also in college, my undergrad is in video production. So I was making this short film for a school project, and I was going through all of this footage of just undercover, like slaughterhouse footage and animal testing footage. And I was inundating myself with this knowledge to the point where it traumatized me. And looking back, I can now say that I actually developed PTSD. You know, if I go through all the symptoms of PTSD, I'm like, yep, check that one. Again, I didn't realize that this was something I could get help for. And so I just kind of went on with life. And then I eventually got a job at a local humane society and worked there for 3 years and burned out. Again, had no idea what I was going through, went off and did some other job. And it was just something was, it pulls you in, right? It's like animal welfare work just pulls you in. It's part of who you are. So I went back and I became an animal control officer. You talk about trauma and burnout. I mean, that was really rough. So I burn out again. You know, I gained more trauma on top of the trauma I already had. And at this time, I'd also lost a pet. And I took it really, really hard, and I fell into a deep depression. And I'm someone who I need to make meaning out of things and try to help others somehow when I'm in pain. And so I decided to go back to graduate school and become a therapist and focus on pet loss. And so it was then that I think the healing process started, as I was learning about psychology, learning about myself through the process. And then, like I said, writing the book, I think, was even more therapeutic. I began therapy and started actually opening up to a therapist about my experiences. And so that's kind of, long story short, that's kind of where my own personal experiences have been with that.
Right. I mean, you went from extremes, basically, from the tell to tell. You know, you went knee deep to help the best way you could in all those environments. But those are pretty, when you're talking about working for humane societies, you know, the rescues and the shelters, and then going into to being an officer controlling the animal control, those are pretty extreme levels of volunteering and getting committed to helping the animals.
Yeah, it's intense work. And, you know, again, looking back, I'm like, man, you know, I didn't do anything to take care of myself. That's really, you know, one of the pillars of managing compassion fatigue, which I'm sure we'll talk about, is self-care and making sure that you take time for yourself. I wasn't in therapy. I wasn't exercising. I was eating like crap. I wasn't sleeping well. I was not doing a good job at all of taking care of myself. So I wasn't resilient. I didn't have the resilience to be able to kind of handle the stress and trauma that was being thrown my way. It was like quicksand. I was just getting further and further and further sucked in, I guess.
Absolutely. And that's the key point. It's a very good point you bring up, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. And I try to live by that mantra every single day. It's never easy, but it's absolutely true, because it's very easy to get so bogged down and so focused on helping animals or any compassion fatigue situation. You know, when you're trying to help others, and next thing you know, you forgot what you're doing. And yes, you're grabbing food on the run, and you're not breathing, and you're not sleeping, and you know the second glass of wine looks pretty good, or the third, or et cetera. But one of the things, you know, I love the workbook and the fact that I was flipping through it, and some of these techniques that you're bringing up are things I do every day. And sometimes I will, yeah, I have to admit, I have to stop myself to make sure I'm doing them. But these things like mindful deep breathing and meditation, you know, I'm very big on meditation, and I've recorded a couple of professional guided meditations that are available. And that seems to be one area that brings me great relief. But I find that, you know, and to me, I will say, you know, I've said this many times before, meditation to me is not necessarily guided meditation or mantras or chants, if that's what you want to do. And that brings you that clarity and allows that subconscious to open up and allows that conscious mind, monkey mind, to shut down for a little while. Then you can do that. But meditation can simply mean gardening, listening to music, breathing, just being in the environment. Anything allows your mind to sort of shut down for a while and allows your body to clear and heal is a form of meditation.
Yeah. And I really wanted to try to cover as many, you know, dimensions of wellness and self-care as possible in the book. So if you're someone who's like, oh, I've tried meditating and I just don't like it. It's like, okay, well, there's a chapter on, you know, nutrition and physical activity and exercise and sleep. And so, I mean, there's hopefully a little bit of something for everyone. And I just say, you know, just try it for a while. You know, if you want to get in shape, you don't go to the gym and do one bicep curl. You know, like you said, you have to remind yourself to do it every single day. And I'm no different. I you know, I might have some expertise in this area, but I still struggle from time to time. I'll give you the perfect example. The past 4 or 5 days have been just pure chaos around our house. So Friday night, we looked out our window and there were two goats on our property. And it's like, well, you don't see that every day. So we spent the next, you know, 2.5 hours. We were out there till at least midnight trying to catch these goats. And we caught one of them. And so we've been kind of, I guess, fostering her over the weekend. And we're still trying to catch her companion. And so it has been all goat all of the time. You know, we had to, you know, build an emergency like shelter for her and, you know, find what do goats eat and how do you keep goats, you know, from destroying everything. And so, like I mentioned, it's been like 24/7 goat, goat, goat. And I'm someone who I try to go to the gym and work out about 4 or 5 times a week. And I had an appointment today with my trainer. And I told my husband, I said, you know, I'm going to cancel my appointment. I want to focus on the goat. He said, no, remember, you have to take a break. You have to take a break and have some normalcy in your life. Because you will burn out. Oh, fine, I'll go to the gym, you know. And so I went to the gym, and he's absolutely right. I went in feeling really fatigued, And I came out feeling energized and ready to go again. And that's the whole point. It's not you go to the spa for a day and you're just like, it's taking these little breaks, whether it is taking 10 minutes to deep breathe or meditate or taking an hour and lifting weights. It's taking these little kind of breaks to relax, recharge, so you can go back and do that work. And that's what makes it sustainable. Because if you burn out, I don't know if you've ever burned out, but it takes a long, long time to come back.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, and to me, there are various stages. Well, I don't know if I'd use the word stage, but different types of burnout. You know, you can have short bursts of burnout. I mean, if you've gone through a day like you did, you're goat herding, you're become the greatest goat herder, collector, savior of all time here. And then you're going on this adrenaline, you're doing, you know, the work, you're trying to help all these things. But, and then in the day, you sit down and you crash. I mean,
Yeah.
You just burn out for that day. And then if that continues day after day, then it compounds itself. So I'm with you. If you can find these releases in you know, things like meditation, yoga, working out of the gym, doing these things that allow your conscious mind to shut off and the subconscious to open up, even if it's for 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, you know, it doesn't have to be a big 1 hour session, something to release that and open it up to the universe and allow the universe to help you out.
Absolutely. And the important thing is we all have to recognize, and this was tough for me, we have to recognize that we have limits. Yeah, I'm someone who I want to save the world. I want to do this. I want to do that. But I'm one person, and that's a hard pill to swallow. But I have limits, and I have to recognize that. And I have to remind myself that every day. And that is part of managing compassion fatigue, is realizing you have limits and what those limits are. And you have to kind of respect those limits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which will bring us up to a perfect segue as we go into our commercial break about I'm only one person, but can one person make a difference? So I want to talk to you a little bit about that, the book, the title of the book, as we lead into that, and find out a little bit more about To Save a Starfish, a compassion fatigue workbook for the animal welfare warrior. Everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continuing our conversation with author and professional counselor of compassion fatigue, Jennifer Blau. Jennifer, the book is called To Save a Starfish, a compassion fatigue workbook for the animal welfare warrior. Now, the title, To Save a Starfish. When I first got the book, I'd look at it and it's got this lovely silhouette of a woman and a dog sort of doing a little chant work, I'm liking to think, or some meditation together. And then I see the title, Starfish. I'm like, I don't see a starfish on here. So tell us a little bit about the title and then, of course, how one person can make a difference.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I have a cute little story that goes with this, but you know, as many authors I'm sure do, you know, kind of just racking their brain. What am I going to call this book? And for me, I really did want to kind of have it reflect the fact that, you know, kind of going back to those limits, it is important to recognize those limits, but it is on the flip side, also important to recognize that. So for example, I have this sweatshirt and it says something to the effect of, to the world, you are just one person. To your dog, you are the world. that just really kind of hits home with me. And if you think about it, so we'll take this goat, for example. Her name is Gracie. Long story short, we found the owner of this goat and they don't want them. This goat's, they've been bounced around and they were going to end up being slaughtered. And it's like, yeah, no, we're going to become goat parents because that's not happening. I can't save all the goats. I can't save all the animals. But to Gracie, this one goat, we saved her life. And that's everything. And that's really what the starfish story is all about. If you're not familiar with the starfish story, it goes a little something like this. There's a woman on the beach and there's all these starfish that have kind of come up with the tide and she's throwing them back in the ocean. And this old man comes up and says, you know, what are you doing? Why are you even wasting your time? You can't save them all. She picks up one and she throws it back and she says, well, I saved that one. I made a difference for that one. And that's really what we have to remember when we kind of question, you know, why do we do this work? Because there's so much more work that has to be done. You know, you've worked in a humane society for every, you know, one animal that gets adopted out, like 10 more come in. And it seems like this never ending kind of battle. But if we focus, if we try to put a little bit more focus on that one going out, the one that we did adopt, the one that we helped, that can help with some of the fatigue and some of the trauma and some of the stress. Oh, and if I could just tell you this really cute story, I met someone, I'm not going to name his name, but I was in an animal welfare conference and I met this person and they had read the book. And he said, after I read your book, he's an executive director of a humane society. He says, me and a bunch of staff members, we all went out and got starfish tattoos. And he showed me his tattoo and I almost burst into tears. It was just so, so meaningful to me that like that story made such an impact on him and his team. And he said, now when we get really kind of worn down, we look at our tattoos and we're kind of reminded that we make a difference. And that's just really meaningful for me. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that resonates in so many different manners because it's such a beautiful story to begin with. Second of all, you have made an impact. You know, whenever you doubt, and when we, you know, as authors, you know, and writers, we write something and occasionally we'll get some feedback. Sometimes we won't. Sometimes it's hateful feedback, depending on how the people are. But the fact that you made such a large impact sort of, to me, reconfirms your commitment and all the wonderful things you do.
Yeah, it really does, because you're right. You don't really, you write this book, you put it out in the world, and then you really don't know. You know, you might get good reviews, but you really don't know, like, has this really made an impact? Has this caused, you know, even if it's just one person to like stay in the business rather than, you know, burning out and leaving the field. And so to have people say, yes, it has made a difference. It's made me stay in the field. You know, it's made me make changes and it's, yeah, it really is reaffirming and it makes it worth all the struggle that I've kind of been through with my own secondary trauma. It kind of makes it worth it because had I not gone through all of that, I wouldn't have wrote the book.
That's right. And now you get to share it with, you know, thousands upon thousands of people, making an impact on them and letting them know they're not alone. And there are some great tools and things that they can apply by picking up a copy of your book to save a starfish. So I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited also to see your tattoo of a goat on one arm and a starfish on the other, Jennifer. That's what I'm looking forward to. Well, real quick on the book itself, a labor of love, a labor of skill sets and backgrounds and things you've gone through. Tell us the challenges of writing a book or the ease of writing the book and putting together this wonderful workbook.
Yeah, well, I have to say, for me, there is no ease. I found the writing process really difficult. And I don't know if it's because like I was so close to the subject or in part kind of writing to, like I said, it was very therapeutic for me. So it was like so close to me that I don't know, maybe it was a little difficult to write. And I'm also a perfectionist, so that there's, you know, there's that. You write a chapter and you come back the next day and read it. It's like, oh my God, this is crap, you know. So, but again, you have to kind of just know your limits and, you know, you can't take 50 years to write a book because then you're really not helping anyone. So at some point you have to let it go. So I published this book in 2015 and then it was just this year, actually in February, I re-released it, the second edition. So starting last year, I added maybe 3,000 words, so kind of a chapter's worth, kind of just like updated everything and rewrote a little bit, and then just released this with that brand new cover this February.
It's fantastic. It's a fantastic book. I encourage everybody to go pick up the book. It's a book workbook. That's the thing I will emphasize. It's the size of a book, but it's a workbook. You know, a lot of times we look at these, we think of workbooks as these giant binders that we're forced to go to class on. But this is a wonderful, lovely little book format. And it's got all kinds of great, wonderful stuff in there to help you if you're involved with animals in any capacity, which anybody that's listening to this show is definitely involved in some fashion with animals, pick up a copy of the book. It's To Save a Starfish, a Compassion Fatigue Workbook for the Animal Welfare Warrior by Jennifer Blau. Jennifer, congratulations again. I'm glad you reworked the book. Glad you got it out there. It's making a major impact. Just keep up the good work, and we do appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim, and I'll get right on sending those tattoo pictures over.
Looking forward to seeing that for sure. All right. Well, everybody, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas from the show, or anybody you want to hear on the show, drop us a line. You can drop us a line at PetLifeRadio.com. We'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring it down the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows and hosts and wonderful material that's out there. It's a cornucopia of fun animal-related shows. So everybody, go listen to it at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, put it in a book, a magazine, an article, a blog, get it out there, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Everybody have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.